Welcome back to another episode of the Castball Podcast. Thanks for tapping in for another week. Last week we took a break from the big league club. Talked about the minor league Mariners a little bit. Since then, Caleb Cowley, the breakout pick for me, and I mean, listen, not just me, consensus breakout across the minors this year. Probably he got called up from Modesto to Everett High A, so good for him. Troy Taylor and Ben Williamson also just got called up. They were already in Everett. They got called up to Arkansas at Double A, so good for them. I don't think I talked about Troy Taylor. He's an intriguing right-handed pitcher in the system. And then Ben Williamson, I did talk about last week. I know that. So good for him. And Caleb Cowley, especially. We'll see if he can continue his torrid start to the year. That takes one key middle of the lineup piece out of Modesto, but I think in the short term, with all the talent they've still got there, I think they're going to be fine. But I feel like by the end of the year, they're going to be ravaged by call-ups. Like, I'm intrigued to see what the team looks like in like a month and a half, 2 months, seeing who all has gotten called up to Everett. By that time, like, the Aqua Sox offense is going to be cooking. They'll get everyone from Modesto. So, fun, good for Caleb Cowley. Fun that I talked about that last week, and then he got called up. That's really cool. But this week, again, thanks for tuning in this week. Back to a normal weekly episode. Probably going to be a shorter one. I could, you know, talk for a while, and I feel like I say it's going to be a shorter one every other week, and then I end up talking for almost an hour. But this week, I mean, there's stuff to talk about, but I want to see how the next week plays out in May. May has been a fine month. It's been an okay month. I think they're 7-7 in May. Like, they've been mid in May. The pitching has kind of fallen back to earth a little bit while the offense has looked better. That was just based on law of averages. I feel like we should have expected that a little bit, but it's rather frustrating that the offense is now just turning it on as the pitching has faltered a little bit this month. But there's been a lot more encouraging stuff going on with the Mariners. I'm going to talk about some unfortunate injuries, some guys who've come back, then who's just been hot in the month of May, who's been not in the month of May, and who's been mid in the month of May, and then who's Julio been in the month of May. And then just some other random notes, and then we'll get out of here. But before I talk about the Mariners, I have two things to talk about my current out-of-the-park baseball franchise. Yes, out-of-the-park baseball. I've talked about it on the show before. I got out-of-the-park baseball 25 a couple weeks ago. Been playing it a lot. I chose my first franchise on the new game. I'm rebuilding the White Sox. It's going pretty well, honestly. I'm in 2025 now. I morbidly killed off the owner and replaced him with Michael Jordan. I didn't change any of like the money or anything, but I thought it'd be fun if the owner of the White Sox was Michael Jordan. And so it's funny to get owner emails from him like, "Hey, Michael Jordan, just checking in." And over time, his stuff, like his ratings and the stuff he feels is important, might change too as the game changes, but that's not what I want to talk about. Two things. I finished the 2024 season, and I get an email from the commissioner's office. Everyone gets this email, all the teams, and it says the National League is getting rid of the DH again. What? I couldn't believe that. We finished the 2024 season, which is this season, if you're not keeping up, and the National League said, nah, screw it. No more DH. We want pitchers to hit again. How many years is that? Three? When did the universal DH come into play? 2 years ago? 3 years ago? It didn't last long in that franchise. I can see it lasting longer in real life, but technically we haven't reached November of 2024 yet to get that news. So that was one thing. And then the other thing I wanted to mention, the Oakland A's are still in Oakland in that game, but they changed their name. They're no longer the Oakland Athletics. A reminder, the Athletics go all the way back to early baseball in Philadelphia. It's one of the most storied franchises in the history of the sport. Like, the Athletics name is so unique as well. There's really no other team like it in America that is named the Athletics. They changed their names to the Valiants. No clue. Genuinely no idea what that means. The logo, the game does auto-generate logos, which is cool. So they changed their name to the Valiants, and it's like, I don't know, it's some red background with a big V. It's pretty boring. Like, I could have designed it, and clearly the computer designed it with minimal effort. Just ridiculous. They stayed in Oakland, but they changed their name. That is the ultimate zag when everyone else was thinking you're going to zig. And, you know, at least Oakland still has a baseball team in my franchise. That's good. The other thing I did, too, besides change Michael Jordan to my owner, was change, and I do this in every save, change the Angels back to Anaheim Angels. And when you do that, the game loads in the old Anaheim Angels logo, which I think goes very hard. So that was another change I made. But I just wanted to mention that here because I thought the A's changing their name to the Valiants was so dumb, and the NL getting rid of the DH is awesome. That would be so funny if they did that again. But now I will, you know, regretfully talk about some bad news with the Seattle Mariners. Injury-wise, I guess I'll start with JP, the most recent one. He is back rehabbing, but he just got hit in the hand yesterday. No broken bones or anything. It sounds like he avoided any injuries, but he's not traveling with the team to Baltimore this weekend, which stinks. He was probably going to, I think, if he didn't get hit in the hand. So that sucks, but it sounds like he'll still be back. His hand is just, like, swollen. And then Polanco, he has a hurt hamstring. There's no IL stint yet. It's only been a couple days, but he hasn't played, and I haven't heard anything else with him, so I think they're probably just playing it by ear. Might be a retroactive IL stint in here when JP gets called back up, potentially. I'm not sure, but he's currently out. And then the two worst ones, Gregory Santos, still not confirmed out for the year, but he had another setback. And just like, that's two setbacks now in a throwing program, which kind of leads me to believe we're not going to see him at all this year. The fact that he's failed two pretty basic throwing programs and had a setback and has to sit for another while longer, like he's going to probably try to go through another program. And if he doesn't succeed there, I think they're going to shut him down, and I feel like we're trending in that direction. So that sucks. That's a huge blow to the potential bullpen that was going to be insane, the back end of the bullpen this year. And then the worst news is Matt Brash, as you all obviously probably know by now, he's out for the year. He's getting Tommy John. I think it was the brace surgery, but he's not going to be back at the start of next year either, I don't think. So we wish him the best. It stinks, but nobody is surprised. It's not, obviously this has been a big topic of conversation in baseball this year, but no one's surprised, especially with Matt Brash. He was the most used reliever last year in baseball in terms of games pitched in, him and Justin Topa. And Justin Topa's hurt right now too. He led the league in appearances, again, out of the bullpen, and you see the slider he throws and the fastball he throws. Of course his elbow's fucked up. Like, yeah, that makes sense, but it sucks. It really sucks, and that makes me a little wary about the bullpen. But that was the bad news. Otherwise, some good news. Dominic Canzone is back from his injury. He is back with the team, and then Brian Wu as well. He gave us a little scare. He gave us a real scare. His first start back, he made it five innings and then came out of the game with the trainer, and everyone's like, oh, no, it's over. It's over. It's absolutely over. But it sounds like he's had like forearm tightness. He said that happened in one of his rehab starts too, if he was just sitting too long in between innings. And he just pitched the other day, and he looked fine. I think they're still ramping him up. But I think his stuff looked pretty good. And he got through five innings decently. So he's trending in the right direction, and that little scare, thankfully, is not anything too serious. And now, one more thing to talk about before I get into just like what's been going on, who's been hot, who's not. Jerry DePoto made a mid-game trade the other day. It was the same game that Polanco came out. I don't know if it's correlated. I doubt it was correlated, because I think trades take longer than like clicking a button in a video game. You know, I think there's more in the works there in terms of both paperwork and like playing phone tag and stuff. But it was just funny. Polanco comes out of the game, and so like 20 minutes later, maybe like half an hour later, we get like he's hamstring, whatever, not super serious. But then Jeff Passan tweets, the Mariners made a trade, which Jerry is an absolute sicko. That man, someone needs, what's he going to do when he retires? Will he ever retire from doing this? Like, when he retires, he's going to wake up in the middle of the night. He's going to be like, I have to trade. He's going to be scratching his neck. He's going to have to play out of the park baseball and just make up these elaborate six-player trades with the Tampa Bay Rays in a hypothetical online scenario. Like, he's an absolute sicko. The only one who really rivals him is Preller. And I'd say Preller is a different beast than DePoto, but both of them are actual trade sickos. And I do kind of love it, but a mid-game trade, dude, that's insane. So he traded Tyson Miller, who was, I think he got DFA'd a couple days earlier. And he was the, what everyone dubbed, the Paul Sewald to Electric Boogaloo. Well, I dubbed him that. But there were obvious parallels. I think he was probably going to be like a fine middle relief arm for the Mariners, but they turned him into a guy named Jake Slaughter, which, first of all, yeah. Jake Slaughter, that is a baseball player name. Absolutely love that. I hope he slaughters some baseballs for the Mariners. That's like the easiest pun you can possibly make. But he is a infielder. MILB, their page lists him as a third baseman, but I think he can play. He can play second. I think he can play first. Seems like he is athletic enough to play in the outfield. Like, just looking at his minor league history, he has played third base, he's played first base, he's played second base, he's DH, he's played a skosh of left field, but mainly second base, third base. 7 innings at shortstop this year in one game for the Iowa Cubs. But point is, I think, I mean, him playing third is cool, but Josh Rojas and Urias probably have that on lock right now and they're healthy. It's second base, I think, is where we'd likely see him, especially if Polanco has an extended injury, and I don't know, maybe they want to play Dylan Moore more in the outfield. This seems definitely like an interesting depth piece. He's hit really well this year in the minors, and he did last year too. But this year he is, well, the past 2 years actually, he's been an above 800 OPS guy. 2022, he was in high A and double A, and he had a 923 OPS in double A in 2022. And then last year, he had an 822 OPS in 104 games at AAA. And then this year, he got off to an even better start at AAA for the Iowa Cubs. He had played in 32 games, 100 at bats. He was slashing 297, 392, 486. That is an 878 OPS. That is really good. We'll see what he does in the PCL. Theoretically, his numbers should remain the same and or go up because the PCL is a great place to hit. It's a great league to hit in. Just seems kind of like an interesting depth piece. Infield wise, that he can play all these infield positions, so you can never have enough depth. And I mean, they flipped like an unknown reliever, Tyson Miller, into a potentially zesty depth second baseman, third baseman guy who looks like he can hit some dingers. So it's intriguing. Very minor trade. The major part of it was that Jerry did it in the middle of a ball game because he is a sicko. But Jake Slaughter, welcome to the Tacoma Rainiers. I'm sure we'll see you in a Mariners uniform at some point. But, I'm going to have a hard time looking at his name and not saying Jake Schiner. He's no longer with the team, but he was with the team for a while and played the same position. And I feel like they look the same, but we'll see. We'll see. I want Jake Slaughter to be up in the bigs just so the puns could be had. Slaughter's a phenomenal last name. But now let's get into who's hot, who's not, who's been mid, and who's been Julio in the month of April. April is not the month that we are in. The month we are in is May. I told you they're 7-7 in May, pretty mid. The offense has picked it up. A couple key guys have picked it up. So who is hot? The new additions of Raley and Garver, they have gotten off to a great May. Absolutely good May. And Garver, this extends back into the last like 10 days of April. He was clearly seeing the ball a little bit better, and his batted balls have started falling. He's been hitting for a little bit more power, but they have been really good. Luke Rayleigh is not quite qualified as a qualified hitter yet in May. I think he's missing out on like five-ish plate appearances, but in May, in 36 plate appearances, he has 3 home runs and 8 RBIs, 2 stolen bases. He is .375 average, .444 on base, .688 slug, .227 WRC plus, which, you know, not sustainable, but he has been looking great at the plate. He's looked like the Luke Rayleigh we traded for. The strikeouts and the swing and miss is going to be there, but the home run and speed combo and better defense than Mitch Haniger in the corner outfield is something that is really good for the team right now. And again, it begs the question, why didn't we see him more at the start of the year? I mean, he scuffled the start, but again, it was April. Like, give the man a chance. You traded for him, and he's going to be a useful player for the Mariners, and he's turned out to win the hearts of the fans so far in May, and he's been really good. I don't have a whole lot more to say about Luke Rayleigh. I mean, I talked about him in the preview. He's sneaky fast because he just doesn't look fast at all. His body type, he just looks like he'd be slow. But no, he offers speed and power in the corner from the left side of the plate, which is a fun little makeup. And his speed, like I tweeted this yesterday, his speed in a vacuum is good in and of itself to combine with the pop. But his speed on the Mariners specifically is so important because this team very much lacks in speed. They have Julio, who is like elite, who has been absolutely making an ass of himself on the base path recently, which I'll talk about. And then you have, I guess, Dylan Moore's the next guy. And like Josh Rojas isn't super fast, but he's a good enough base stealer. But there's just not a lot of speed. And that is kind of why I was making the case for him to play more early on, because Cancone doesn't offer much speed either. Mitch offers no speed. And Rayleigh can play first over Ty France, who also offers no speed. And I don't know. The speed aspect is super important. This team really lacked it last year. They still lack it this year. But Luke Rayleigh does offer them, like, in a full season, 20-ish, above 20 stolen bases, 25 stolen bases, something like that. He's got 2 in 11 games in the month of May. So he can steal. And he's a pretty aggressive base runner, too. So Luke Rayleigh, continue to rake. And then Mitch Garver. Mitch Garver has been the best qualified hitter so far for the Mariners in May, 138 WRC+. Plus. He's walking a lot. He socked a couple dingers. He's striking out a lot, but we expected that. And he's just been, the past three and a half weeks, he has looked like the Mitch Garver that we were promised, but expected. He has been mashing left-handed pitching, and he's been not really chasing. He doesn't chase. He draws a good amount of walks, and we see what it looks like when he puts a charge into a ball. He can really hit it, and he's going to strike out a decent amount, but all of that is pretty valuable, especially if he can continue just absolutely shitting on left-handed pitching, which he's been doing. That is the bread and butter. That's what got him paid by the Mariners, and he needs to continue doing that. Cal Raleigh has still been great. Josh Rojas has cooled off for sure, but has still had a solid month of May so far. He has a 132 WRC plus so far in May. And that's, you know, it's not as good as like the 180 he was sporting coming into to May, but he's still just been a stable bat at the leadoff spot, filling in for JP. And when JP's back, I don't know what they're gonna do. JP earned that spot last year, and you know, fair play, he was really bad before he got hurt. But even when he's bad, he still gets on base a tremendous amount. So maybe you drop, I don't know, maybe you drop Julio, or you drop everyone one rung. You go JP leadoff, Rojas 2, Julio 3, Cal 4, Garver, Rayleigh 5, 6, and then whoever else after that. I think that might be the move here. Or maybe you just hit JP 6th or 7th to start just to see where he's at after his injury. and keep Rojas in the starting spot because he's been awesome leading off. And then Cal has continued to be really good. He's continued to be very stable behind the plate. He has 4 home runs in May so far. He leads the team in home runs. He has as many home runs from the right side of the plate as he had in his career coming into this year, which is something that I didn't even consider coming into this year, that he was going to improve his power from the right-hand side of the plate. And if he's consistent with that all year, that's amazing, because that just feels like when he's playing, and he's a catcher, so he's going to play a little bit less than everyone else, but when he's playing, I feel like you can just pencil him in as the 4, as the cleanup hitter for both sides of the plate, and that's super valuable. He's been so tough this month. He's gotten battered, I feel like, this month. Catchers always get battered, but he got his hand whacked the other day. Like, that's how Contreras fractured his wrist. Thank God it didn't happen to Cal. And he hits a dinger the next inning. Like, it's crazy. So he's still been he's been the most stable guy all year, him and Josh Rojas, which is hilarious. And then the other guy who's been hot and in a filling the need role is Dylan Moore. Dylan Moore has been crucial to what this offense has done the past couple weeks. 121 WRC plus in May so far. Not striking out. He's striking out a little bit less than league average, throwing a decent amount of walks, has a couple home runs, just been like a solid presence in the box and has filled the lineup spot for JP really well. He's filled in and provided great production from him. He's obviously not the shortstop that JP is. It looks a little bit clunkier over there, but he's done fine. He's done enough of a job out there to continue starting him, especially with the way he's been hitting at the plate. He's just been really, really good filling in for JP, and it's going to be tough when he comes back. They're going to have to try to fit him into the lineup because he's been hitting so well. And so, I don't know. They're going to have some lineup issues, and it's not necessarily the best lineup issues because it's not the best lineup. It's congestion with guys who are, you know, they've been hitting well, but it's not like we got to decide whether to play this all-star or the other all-star. It's like, yeah, you want to play this guy who's fine or this guy who's fine. It's more who's been hitting the best. And I think it depends on what Polanco's injury outlook looks like and what Canzone looks like when he comes back. But I'll get into the bad, but Mitch Haniger might have to be dropped from the lineup routinely here soon. But let's just go. Who's not? Who has not been good recently? Who has not been good in May? Luis Urias has not been good in May. He 63 WRC plus and 40 plate appearances so far in May. Not great. Really not great at all. He had a bad throwing error the other night. I remain skeptical on the third base platoon, but on the year, he's been fine. He's been fine. But now he's got Jake Slaughter behind him. He's kind of looked like we've expected. He hasn't played that much in the grand scheme, but he's not giving you much. He's definitely maybe the most expendable guy on the 26th when JP comes back and Rivas gets optioned. Again, it depends on what Polanco looks like, but, I mean, we'll see. We'll see if they just say, hey, Jake Slaughter, welcome to the bigs. Luis Urias optioned because he's been bad. And if he's not even going to provide good defense when he is playing at third base, then what is even the point? So he's been bad. Really, the really tough one, I mentioned Polanco. He has not been good this year at all, and then he just got hurt. I don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it. Colton Wong. I remember last year, it took us probably, what would you say, in your opinion, a couple months, 2 months until end of May, maybe, to be like, hey, we're waiting for him to turn it on here. And then June comes and you're like, oh man, he might be cooked. And I don't think Polanco is quite there yet. But it feels like a situation where he comes back and his hamstring's fine. He continues to just kind of be a below league average bat. And it's, you know, even if he had great second base defense, which he hasn't been, that's not a premium position where you're going to value that too much. Are we going to get to that point where it just feels like every week, week in, week out, we're like, we're just waiting for Blanco to get things going? Like, his second base is just the absolute bane of Jerry DePoto's existence. And since Cano left, it's been the boogeyman position. It's been the Kendrick Lamar to Jerry DePoto's Drake. Like, truthfully, it's been so bad. And you trade for Jorge Polanco, and maybe a year or two late. Maybe this should have came a couple years ago, but you trade for him, and the track record is good. And you think there's, like, a good baseline with him being a switch hitter, and just he's been such a stable, productive hitter for 4 years now, basically. I mean, since he started playing every day around 2017, 2018, he was like, okay, this guy is going to be a pretty good shortstop or second base for a little while. And he has been, and he's in year what? I think he's in year 10 now in the league. He is 30. He's going to turn 31 during the season. I don't know. I don't want to proclaim him cooked. I want to give him more time. It just hasn't looked good. It hasn't looked good at all. And it's tough because it felt like that was the solution. That was the trade. That was the move that everyone probably felt the best about. It was like, finally, we have a second baseman. But that's also kind of what the Colton Wong deal felt like too. So I don't want to say Wong's name in the same sentence as Polanco. It feels like it's cursing him, but it's just not been good. And then the last hitter who really has not looked great is Mitch Haniger. He did hit a home run last night. He had a couple hits and a walk. He had a really good game the other night against the Royals. But on the whole, in May, he had a really good couple first weeks. It was really good to see him hitting well up there. But the last couple weeks in May have been bad. I think he'll still get some decent run and play time through the month of May. But if it keeps up with this 77 WRC plus the rest of the way in May, I don't know how you can justify continuing to play him when his defense is that bad. If your defense is that bad in right field, you better be putting up great offensive numbers. And if he's not going to do that, I don't know. I was so skeptical on this move from a fan perspective and an emotional perspective. I loved it. I was like, Mitch Haniger, he's back in Mariners uniform. He is going to recapture his all-star form in his Mariners uniform, despite how absolutely cooked he looked when he played last year. And he just hasn't looked good. He just hasn't looked good. He had a couple good weeks, and since then, it's just been so bad. And I think the defense is making me think he's been the worst player in the league. I mean, he still has some time to win my heart back. The defense has been so bad. Like, he was never a good defender and right to begin with. Peak seasons with the Mariners offensively, he was never a good outfielder by most metrics. And obviously, it's not going to get better with age. He's 33 now, and he looks even more cooked. It feels like, and that's another thing that Raley has on him, is Raley is better outfield-wise. He might not be himself a great outfielder, but boy, is he an upgrade to Mitch Haniger right now. I might be an upgrade to Mitch Haniger out there right now. It looks so bad. It's a ball in the gap feels like it could go for three instead of him taking a nice route and holding it to a single. I don't know. Just doesn't look good. He doesn't look good. Lots of whiffing. He's been really good about not chasing recently, and his strikeout rate isn't crazy in the month of May. And on the whole, throughout the season, he has been really good at not chasing pitches outside of the zone. But it's now in May, it's just been a lot of weak grounders and pop-ups. It just feels like there's something off. I don't know whether it's timing or StatCast just added bat speed. Maybe it's a bat speed thing. I don't know. It hasn't been good, though. It has not been good. And with that, who's been mid? And really, Ty France is the only one. Ty France has a 104 WRC plus in the month of May. He has hit home runs in back-to-back games, though. And the latter home run that he hit against the Royals was a phenomenal swing and bat drop combo. It was great. It was one of the best swings, maybe his best swing all year, but one of the better Ty France swings I've seen in quite a long time, coupled with an amazing bat drop. Absolutely killed that home run. And he keeps pulling me back in. He has these stretches and I'm like, oh, he's cooked. And then he does what he did in the last two games. I'm like, oh, he might be back. Well, it's really ugly in the month of May. 1.9% walk rate, really bad, with a 27% strikeout rate. I just don't know anymore. The Ty France back meter is currently at an all-time confusion level. I'm so conflicted. He still is hitting the ball pretty hard, but it's the outcomes, again, have not been ideal. But, you know, 104 WRC plus in May, 52 plate appearances. That's 4% better than the average. I'll take that. I think we're at a point where we're going to be seeing more Luke Rayleigh over there. Maybe against right-handed pitching, Ty doesn't play quite as much, and it's Luke Rayleigh at first base and Canzone in the outfield. And then I guess if they insist on playing Haniger still in the outfield, him. But this is tough when you build a lineup out of not dead wood, but middle-of-the-road wood, not ideal wood. Because you're going to have to play like Mitch or Ty. You can't really bench both of them with their current roster unless, yeah, you really just can't. It's been tough. So I don't know. I think I'm almost at a point where I think it might be even more valuable to have a guy like Jonathan Class A on the squad instead of Mitch Haniger, because at least, like, if Class A is going to strike out a lot, and maybe he's not going to walk very much, he at least, one, offers me some intriguing prospect upside that Haniger clearly does not. And the speed thing, where Class A can also play all three positions pretty well just based on his speed alone, and just the base path, he's going to add so much more value to the team than Mitch Haniger when he's not hitting well. If Jonathan Class A is not hitting well, he'll still do a lot more with the times he gets on base than Mitch Haniger does. I'm close to the point where I don't know if Mitch Haniger belongs on the 2024 Mariners. I will give him until the end of May, and then we'll reevaluate that take. It just might be worth having a speedster in Class A up more than Haniger. Haniger might offer, just like, he is obviously more of a big league track record. We've seen him do it in a Mariners uniform, but that was a couple years ago. I don't know. I'm at a point. I'm reaching a point here, but we'll see. We'll give him a little bit more time. Anyway, Luke Rayleigh, he's going to be playing every day no matter what. A lot of this really does depend on Canzone and what he does. I think at this point against right-handed pitching, they really need another outfielder, I think, or a left-hand first baseman. The Giants are really middling and are really hurt right now, and I think Lamont Wade is having a phenomenal year. I think he's definitely gotten some BABIP luck. I just poured over his stats a little bit today. He's definitely gotten some batted ball luck, but his approach has been really solid, and Jerry loves a platoon. I think Lamont Wade could be an interesting trade target for this team to maybe take over full-time at first base, or at least platoon with Ty France, I guess. And then that would allow you to, against right-handed pitching, drop Haniger from the lineup, hit Lamont at first base, drop Ty France to the bench, and then hit Canzone and Rayleigh in the corners, just lefty load up against lefties. Or if Class A is up, you put Class A out there, you move Canzone to the DH, you give Garver a rest against the right-handed pitcher. I don't know. Lamont, I just wanted to mention Lamont Wade. I was thinking about trades with the Giants and relievers, but he is also would be a really intriguing piece to add to this team. I mean, Jerry would trade for him and he'd be terrible. I just know that would happen. But I don't know. This lineup, it's cluttered in all the wrong ways right now, but it's been pretty good in May. I say all this complaints with, like, a lot of these guys have been good. There's just problems in the future I can see. But the lineup itself, before I talk about Julio, the lineup itself in May, they're 12th in runs scored, which is fine. And they are 7th in total team WRC plus. Like, that feels kind of like the ceiling of this offense. I don't think they're ever going to be the best offense in the game, but I think this offense could hover, especially if Julio's going forward. I think they could hover around like 10th ish, like the top third, top half at least offense. And you couple that with the pitching staff, and that's a pretty good ball club. It's just the pitching has faltered a little bit recently, and the hitting's been good. So they just got to put those two together. We see what happens when they put them together. It's great. It's great. But now, before I get into some other random notes, who's Julio? Instead of who's hot, not, and mid, I want to talk about Julio because we judge him differently, as we should. But I think everyone else, we hold him to a higher standard, as we should. We've seen what he can do. And he has been fine. He's been better, I will say, in the month of May. But it's been a lot of the same, and a couple good things in May and a couple things that we're still waiting on in terms of like power. He hit a home run the other week. A nice home run, straightaway center. But the same problem has persisted through the month of May in terms of lack of power, specifically just lack of lifting the baseball. We've talked about this ad nauseum. It's the Vlad Guerrero Jr. affliction of he's still hitting the ball so damn hard when he hits it. He is still so good at hitting the ball hard. When he hits the ball, it is a rocket. It's been a lot of low line drives and hard ground balls. And not a lot of power. He has 2 home runs on the year. It's May 16th when I'm recording this. That's not where you want him to be. I mean, what'd he hit? He hit 30 last year, right? You want and expect at least 20 plus from Julio every year. And you know he can do it. Not a lot of guys can hit the ball as hard as he can. He's in the top 4% of Major League Baseball in max exit velocity. Like, the raw power is still there. He has a 48.8 hard hit rate. That is really good. It's a little bit below what he averaged in his first 2 years, but it's right there. It's just been, I don't know, it's interesting because his average launch angle this year is 9.8, and that doesn't really mean much just saying that. Last year it was 8.5. which is lower, and yet he hit 32 home runs last year. Obviously a bigger sample to look at compared to this year, but the thing about this year, he's barreling the ball a lot less, which means he's just not hitting it on the sweet spot of the barrel as much. It's impressive that he's still managing that amount of hard hits and exit velocities without as many barrels, because that is how you hit the ball the hardest, is the, like on MLB The Show, it's the perfect. That is a barrel. And his barrel rate percentage is down like 4% this year than it was last year. And so, I don't know, he's still elite at like this new bat speed metric he's elite at, but that like in a vacuum doesn't mean shit. We knew that. We knew he swings it really hard. But his average exit velocity is good. His hard hit rate is good. His batting average is solid for where we think it should be. His fielding has been great. But he still is just having middling numbers. Like in May, it's a 119 WRC plus. For the average big leaguer, that's great. That's awesome for the average big leaguer. 19% better than league average in runs created, weighted. That's great. But for Julio, that's not. He needs to be better than that. And it's been from his, he's just hitting a lot of singles. 375 slug in May. That's really, really low and very ugly. He's a 329 slugging on the year. That is so bad. A 646 OPS. Like, that is just so bad. The one thing that has been good, again, he's still hitting the ball really hard, so it's there. It's the pull side power. He just needs to pull fly balls. If he pulls fly balls more than he is doing right now, with the amount of hard hit balls that he hits, again, he will be one of the best hitters in the league. Like, we know he is. Like, we've seen him do before in his first 2 years. He just hasn't quite done that this year. The thing that is trending in the right direction in this small sample of May so far in 62 plate appearances, he has an 8.1% walk rate, which for his career, that his career walk rate is like 6.8 or something like that. So that's a little bit better than his career. That's right close to league average, around 8, something like that. But the K rate in May in 62 plate appearances is 19.4, which is great. His K rate this year has been closer to 29, I think. His average K rate for his career is around 25, which is right around league average again, like hovering around league average. So that has been intriguing. He's still swinging and missing a lot. Like, he really is not, he's never been like the worst K guy in the league. It's he strikes out probably too much. But he swings and misses a lot, and he has been doing that more this year at pitches in the zone, which really sucks. If you really want to get into the StatCast bat speed thing, his bat speed is elite and his swing length is terrible. So he's very long to the ball, and yet he swings really hard. So I'm not a swing expert, but there are a lot of people that are. I think there's something to shorten his swing so he's quicker to the ball. Because if he's quicker to the ball and can barrel more pitches, he's gonna hit so many home runs and at least extra base hits. The problem with this too is you could slug a decent amount by gapping stuff, and he's not really even lifting the ball enough to hit it into the gaps. Like, he hits low line drives, and with his speed, it just kind of needs to find a gap, and it's not even really doing that. So on top of that, he's been making an ass of himself on the base path, like I said. He slid off the second base on a steal twice in the past week for out. He got picked off the other night. I think he's in his own head. I think he knows he's struggling. I think he knows he's better than this. I think it's clearly there's just a mental block going on right now, and I hope he can be better. But that's all I'm going to talk about with Julio. And that was the offense. The pitching, I don't want to get into any specific pitching stats. The bullpen has been a little shaky recently. Gabe Spire, his month of May has gotten off to a pretty rough start. Cody Bolton hasn't looked amazing. Tyson Miller got traded. Tyler Salcedo was hurt. Stanek has been shaky the whole year. Kirby's needs look pretty solid out of the bullpen, which is nice. Trent Thornton has continued looking pretty good. ERA jumped a little bit this month, but his FIP still looks great. Same with Stanek's. Andres Munoz, I do want to touch on him. He's been great, especially recently. Long saves recently for him in the month of May. But I said a few weeks ago, his stuff was down. It's looked much better recently. His stats this year have been awesome. He's looked great. He's been kind of everything that they've needed him to be, especially with Brash and Santos hurt. He's going to be even more important now with the Brash news and the Santos news. He's going to be so important to this team the entire year. And it's why I think they should likely, and probably are, looking at relief trades right now, because I'm worried it's going to have a Brash problem. Munoz has already had injury issues the past couple of years, and now with less confidence in the rest of your guys around him in the back of the bullpen, they're only going to lean on Munoz more, and it's going to put more stress on his arm. He's going to pitch more innings, and they need reinforcements. And I think Jerry, being the traitor that he is, I think he's probably thinking about making a relief move sooner rather than later. I don't think he's going to wait around for the trade deadline to come to trade for a solid relief pitcher. I think there's plenty of teams right now that you could look at and target relievers. I mean, if you just scroll through the standings, like, you can look for, if he trades for Chris Flexen from the White Sox again, go full circle, that would be very funny. But you can look for the Angels bullpen. You can look at the White Sox bullpen, the Marlins bullpen, even the Mets bullpen to an extent, the Cardinals bullpen, the Giants bullpen. There's plenty of teams that are trending in the wrong direction right now record-wise and have serviceable bullpen arms to trade with or trade for. And I think Jerry should and probably is looking at that, like, right now. Because you need Munoz to make make it through the year as unscathed as possible. And they've already pitched him so much in the month of May, it's felt like. And he throws so hard and has had problems before. They can't overwork him. Because if he goes down, the confidence in the bullpen, man, it would hit rock bottom. Man, I'm going to try to get out of here in a couple of minutes. I knew I was going to end up talking the full time anyway. But the last thing I wanted to say, George Kirby, he has a cutter now. I think he has a cutter. He debuted it on the 13th of May against the Royals on his start. He threw five of them that outing. Statcast had it as a slider, which makes sense because he's never thrown a cutter. Or he hasn't thrown a cutter, I don't think, in Major League Baseball. Maybe his rookie year. I'd have to look. But Statcast had it as a slider, but it was definitely a cutter. Looking back on it, someone had a video of the five pitches that he threw, and they were definitely cutters. He was sitting 92, threw the first one 93. Pretty interesting that he's adding a cutter. It was funny to hear Goldsmith during that game, because the first one, he was like, that's a 93 mile an hour slider. The second and third one, he was like, yeah, that's a hard slider. Is that a new slider? And then by the fourth and fifth, he was like, no, 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 I think it's a cutter. And Goldie was right. It is a new cutter. He can add any pitch to his repertoire at this point. But if he's sitting 92 with a cutter with his control, that's ridiculous. It's something definitely to like counter his front door two-seamer. I think it's really good that he's being proactive about it, because his two-seamer now is known for that front-door action, and I think lefties will likely try to sit on it more, and I think this is a perfect pitch to counter that. It's very similar to how I talked about Logan's new cutter in that episode I did, talking about Logan's pitch mix, where you can throw that in the dead zone, like low and in, just below the bat path against lefties. And again, if he can sit 92 and locate it, could be a really good like low-usage pitch this year. Like, I don't foresee him throwing it a lot, but it offers less sweep and stuff than his slider. Between his slider, curveball, and then you mix in a 92 mile an hour cutter in there, where people are going to think that's his fastball, last second dips just a little bit low, that's nasty. And you mix in the splitter and his fastball and his two seamer. Oh man, I love Kirby. I am convinced over the next decade, we could be talking about Kirby like Yu Darvish in terms of like his pitch arsenal. Yu Darvish is one of my favorite pitchers of all time, and he's probably thrown 30, 40, 50, 100 even, screw it. He's thrown so many different types of pitches in his career. Just go to his Savant page. Like, let's go to his Savant page right now for this season and see how many pitches he's thrown this season alone. Slider, four seamer, sinker, sweeper, split finger, curveball, cutter, knuckle curve. That's all this year. And if you just look down the line, and all these pitches have different colors on Savant, and it's just a rainbow. Like, you look down, going back to like 2013, 2016, 2014, there's so many pitches on here. Slow curve, knuckle curve, curveball, all three different pitches, cutter, slider, sweeper, sinker, four seamer, split finger. And in those pitches, he's talked about, he has different variations of his sinker, two seamer, different variations of his slider, different variations, obviously, of his curveball. Even his four-seamer, he's talked about, he throws it differently sometimes. Kirby feels like a guy who's so both wants to do this and wants to learn more pitches, but also just has that raw ability to learn pitches. It feels like he could, by the end of his career, we could be like, yeah, Kirby threw every pitch in the book. Like, he has the talent, the natural talent and like inclination to do that. To my knowledge, though, I don't think Darvish has ever thrown a knuckleball. So I think Kirby has that on him. And yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how much he throws the cutter. Again, I think it probably will end up being his least used pitch this year. But if he threw five against the Royals, first time throwing it this year. If he just slowly mixes it, slowly sprinkles that in over outings, that can make a big difference And also could just be kind of an out ground ball pitch for him to get, especially if he can locate it on the fringes. It's really hard to hit a cutter that is on the fringe of the plate. Like, to square up a cutter, it kind of needs to be a mistake in the middle of the plate. Otherwise, it's just really hard to barrel that pitch. But so he added a cutter. That was the last thing I want to say. Otherwise, I'm about at the time I wanted to talk. Thank you for listening. The Mariners, as I speak today, are still in first place. They're a game and a half above the Rangers. The Rangers and Mariners have been trying to give each other the lead, but the Rangers have had a pretty bad few days. They got swept by the Rockies last week, which that's bad. Both of these teams are begging the Astros to make a run, and it's pissing me off, really. Mariners need to really go on a run if they want to separate themselves from the Astros, because they're looming. They still don't look amazing, but they're there. They're close enough that it's making me antsy. But it's not getting any easier this month. The month of June, I think, offers some relief in their schedule, and they just got to get to June, because the rest of this month of May is tough. This road trip coming up is brutal. They go to the Orioles for 3 games this weekend. They go to New York to play Yankees, 4 games in New York, which that is probably the two best teams in the American League right there, the Orioles and the Yankees. And then they go to the Nationals after that to cap off the road trip for 3 games, which the Nationals are no slouch this year, not as good as the Yankees or Orioles. But and then they get no rest at all to come back home to play a 4-game set against the Astros to finish the month. That is a really tough schedule with no off days. This is going to be a huge, huge 2 weeks for this baseball team, especially just for the Rangers and Astros to see what they do as well. So here's hoping the road trip goes well. But Orioles, Yankees, it's going to be tough on the road. It's going to be really, really tough, but I hope they can stick it out and get some more series victories. They keep just winning series as 2-3, so, or 2-1. But that is it for this episode. I very much appreciate if you're still listening to my voice and have listened to this whole episode. Greatly appreciate it. Of course, recommend to your friends, family, your coworkers who might be inclined to listen to someone rant about Mariners baseball for 50 minutes a week. But I hope you have a good rest of your week. I will likely be back next week to talk about the Orioles and Yankees series. But until then, of course, go Mariners.